Ki Jai. Prem Shri Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shri Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskatya De Satarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padichana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Anchakalpa Chubishchaki Pasundabhye Pachapachitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama. So it is June 12th, 2023, Ljubljana, Slovenia, and we're going to be looking at excuses, blame, and boundaries. So are we depleted or energized? So we'd like to have an energized spiritual life. So we're going to look at five things. Determination in tamas, rajas, sattva, and bhakti. The secret of surrender. Having fresh challenges. Having responsibility without blame or shame. And boundaries to avoid burnout and discouragement. So this is only the second time I've taught this class. So I would especially appreciate any feedback, positive, negative, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, determination. So Krishna very nicely explains determination in the Bhagavad Gita. So in tamas, it's just, I'll do it tomorrow. Maybe it's too hard. I don't know. I can't do this. I'm useless. Nothing can be done. I wish I could do it, but I can't. Rajas is, I'm going to be determined if I can get a good result for myself. And if it doesn't look like I'm going to get a good result for myself, then I just give up. And in sattva, Krishna says it's maintained by yoga practice. Yoga practice means to link with the Lord. So because one is linked with the Lord, one is able to be always determined. One has unbreakable determination through the ups and downs of life. And in bhakti, determination is ahoitukiya pratiyata. There's nothing that stops it, and there's no personal motivation. One is determined just for love. So we want to, our first thing is to work at having determination, at least in sattva, which is still selfish, but at least in sattva, and if possible, in bhakti. So this next area is based on, am I going too fast, or you can manage? Everybody else who's not getting translation, is this speed okay? I'm going a little fast today. All right. So this is from a letter Srila Prabhupada wrote to Jai Pitaka Maharaj in 1972. And this is one of my all-time favorites. Now, I've put in the numbers here. Prabhupada didn't have the numbers in his letter. So the secret of surrendering to Krishna is that such surrendered devotee sees that everything is part of Krishna's plan. Whatever is meant to be, I am doing that. Let me do it with my full attention to every detail. Let me become absorbed in such service. Never mind what it is. Let all other considerations be forgotten. And only my desire to do the best for Krishna's alone pleasure is my motive. This may be a little hard to translate because Prabhupada's English is kind of cute here. So we're going to look at these one at a time. Everything is part of Krishna's plan. Whatever is meant to be, I am doing. So sometimes in this world, whatever we're doing, we're thinking about doing something else. We're thinking about what we're going to do when we finish what we're doing. Let me hurry up and get this done so I can do something else. Or we think about, I'm not doing this well enough. Right? I should be doing this better, or I should be doing something else, or I need to finish this up and get going to something else. So here Prabhupada's talking about something that's very popular in the modern world called present moment awareness. To be absorbed in the present moment. At every moment, at every place, with everyone, there's an opportunity for serving Krishna, and I am Krishna's servant. So the question is, what service do I have for Krishna in this moment? What service do I have for Krishna in this moment? Maybe it's just to be nice to the person at the store. You know, maybe it's just to drive carefully, whatever it may be. It might be planning something for the future. Maybe our service in this moment is buying a train ticket or a plane ticket for a month from now. But we're still absorbed in that service at this moment. That whatever situation I am in, it's Krishna's arrangement that I am in this situation at this particular time with these particular living entities. By the way, just doing this one thing really changes one's life and one's enthusiasm. What service can I do in this moment? Next one, let me do it with my full attention to every detail. So whatever is our service in that moment, to do it carefully, to really pay attention, moment by moment by moment by moment by moment. How can I give my attention to the details at this moment? This next one that Prabhupada says has been identified by sociologists and psychologists as being in a state of flow, which is something like being in samadhi, where you're completely absorbed in what you're doing and you're not aware of anything else. You're completely absorbed in what you're doing and you're not aware of anything else. So we all know how to do this. We all have things that we do that fully absorb us, and we forget about everything else. But we should actually be that absorbed in the details of our moment-to-moment service. And we can do that if we see Krishna in them. Now, somebody might misunderstand this instruction to mean that I should give all of my energy in this moment to what I'm doing. But if we did that, then the next moment we would be exhausted. Right? Does that make sense to everybody? So I'd like to give you an analogy. Let's say that you're working a job and you got paid in cash. All right? And so you get paid a certain amount in cash every month. And then you're going to budget. You're going to say, all right, I'm going to spend this much on food, this much on clothes, this much on transportation, maybe this much on entertainment. And you have different envelopes that you have labeled with these different categories. And you put the right amount of cash in those envelopes. Everybody following me? So now you have your clothing envelope. And you know that I can spend all the money in this envelope on clothing this month, and there'll still be enough money for everything else. So when you're getting clothing that month, you can spend everything that's in that envelope. So in a similar way, every day we have a certain amount of energy. And we can think, well, how much energy am I going to allocate to the different parts of the day, different activities that I'm doing, then when we're doing that activity, we can give that activity all the energy that we have allocated for that activity. Does everybody understand what I'm saying? And you're still going to have energy left over for other things. So it's a complete absorption. At the same time, you're keeping some energy in reserve for other things. You're not opening those envelopes right now. Yes? So when we're chanting japa, just japa. When we're studying shastra, shastra. When we're shopping, shopping. Right? And if the mind says, oh, now you have to think about something else, maybe you can take a note, you know? Like I have on my phone a little app for taking a note. I have to do this. Okay, just put it in my list. Now I can focus on what I'm doing. And I will give my attention to that later. This technique is very helpful, especially like during japa. If the mind's saying, we have to do this, and what about this, and what about this, and you have to go there. And you can say, my dear mind, right now I'm using my japa envelope. I have another envelope for these other things, and we will open that at 9 o'clock. Do you understand? Yes? Then make sure you actually open it at 9 o'clock, or your mind will not believe you next time. All right, last one. Only my desire to do the best for Krishna's alone pleasure is my motive. So we just want to make Krishna smile. Now this one also, if this is all you understand from this presentation, if this is the only thing you get, this is a life changer. Generally, we are trying to satisfy so many other people other than Krishna. And we become very frustrated. Srila Prabhupada often says that it is impossible for us to fully satisfy another jiva. We cannot do it. Nor can any jiva fully give us satisfaction. And he often gives the example of Gandhi, who dedicated his whole life for his country and still some other citizen of his country killed him. He wasn't happy. Prabhupada talks about a man who wanted to take sannyas, you know, and he says to his wife, okay, you know, I've taken care of you for all these years, raised our children, provided everything, now it's time for me to take sannyas. And the wife will say, what have you done? You haven't done anything. Even in ordinary life, right, I always give the example that, you know, the husband's favorite preparation is lasagna. So on Monday, the wife makes lasagna, and he's like, thank you so much. Then on Tuesday, she makes lasagna, and he says, why are you making the same thing 2 days in a row? What will satisfy someone at 10 o'clock in the morning will make them unhappy at 11 o'clock in the morning. Yes? And other people don't see how much hard work and time and trouble we put into everything. All they see is the result, and a lot of times the result is not very good. And then we feel so frustrated. Is this only my experience or everybody else has this experience? Yeah? Just try to satisfy your family, your friends, your country. Whatever. Now, people will argue, or to try to satisfy yourself, I find that hard too. I can be my own worst critic. Right? I'll do something and everyone else will say, Urmila, that's wonderful. And I'm thinking, slide number 5 could have been better. You know? Now, people will argue, well, aren't we told that we're supposed to serve the devotees and that serving the devotees is higher than serving Krishna? So, my dear friends, this is the trick. Don't try to serve devotees independently. That's like we're told not to worship the demigods independently, and they're all devotees. Don't try to serve the devotees as if they're God. Try to serve the devotees to please Krishna. Now, we all know how to do this. Right? I can be talking to you, but actually maybe I don't care about you. Maybe I'm just trying to impress you. And I'm thinking, while I'm talking to you, you're going to be watching and thinking, oh, Urmila's doing so nicely talking to her. Yes, do we all know how to do this? So many times we have it backwards. Like I'm trying to chant nicely so the devotees will think, oh, Urmila's such an advanced devotee. I'm serving Krishna trying to impress the devotees. You understand? Actually, I should be serving the devotees trying to impress Krishna. Just switch it. The devotees may be happy with you. They may not be happy with you. They will not always be happy with you. I will give you my absolute, I will promise you that the other members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness will not always be happy with you, even if you are a pure devotee. I absolutely promise you this. But if you try to serve the devotees nicely, to please Krishna, Krishna will be happy with you. So this is, it's a simple thing, simple concept. But if we get this, then we will not feel so frustrated with ourselves and we'll not feel so frustrated with others. One of the main reasons that people feel bitter, and we'll get to this in a little bit, is because they're trying to satisfy people independently of Krishna, and when that doesn't work, they become very angry and very bitter. And especially if they think the devotee is going to be God and satisfy all of their desires. So just to work in this moment, what service can I do in this moment with full attention to every detail, forgetting about everything else, just so Krishna will smile? And if we do that, it's very easy to maintain our enthusiasm, even if things are difficult. Fresh challenges. So this is a very, very well-known letter from Srila Prabhupada. Kurandar was at that time a big manager in ISKCON. Prabhupada wrote, "Leaders shall be careful not to kill the spirit of enthusiastic service, which is individual and spontaneous and voluntary. They should try always to generate some atmosphere of fresh challenge to the devotees so that they will agree enthusiastically to rise and meet it. That is the art of management, to draw out spontaneous loving spirit of sacrificing some energy for Krishna." So we should always have some fresh challenge in our life. You know, if our leaders aren't whatever together enough to do this for us, we should try to do it for ourselves or work with other people who can help us to find always some fresh challenges, something that we can feel spontaneous loving service energy, Prabhupada's saying here. Oh, I want to sacrifice for that. I want to sacrifice for that. I want to put my energy into that. All right, responsibility, the blame and shame game. So we're going to look at this in the modes and in bhakti. And the way that this works is the one at the bottom is lower. All right, usually we read from top to bottom. So this is a slide I need to put more work into. Yes, I know that. And I actually want to have a picture for each one of these, but just haven't had the time. So the bottom one is lower. Like this is lower tamagun, this is higher tamagun. Lower rajagun, higher rajagun. Lower sattvagun, higher sattvagun. Okay, so the main thing we see in tamas is I'm helpless. I'm a victim. I can't do anything about it. Whatever the it is. And the bottom level is it's all your fault and I can't do anything about it. It's my mother's fault. She didn't love me enough. My father's fault. He was never home. My school's the fault of my teachers. It's the fault of the government. It's the fault of the scientists. It's my guru's fault. It's my temple president's fault. It's my wife's fault. It's my child's fault. It's God's fault. And I can't do anything about it. I'm a terrible person. I never get anything done. But it's not. It's everybody else's fault. And I can't fix it. Okay, higher tamagun is, it's all my fault, but I can't do anything about it. And this masquerades as humility. It's not humility. It's tamas. I'm a terrible, useless, horrible person, and no matter what I try to do, I can't fix it. The other day when I was in America, I was someplace, I can't remember where, and I was hearing some song like this. They were singing, somebody was singing a song like this. You know, I can never fix anything about myself. I never get any better. I'm always terrible. Yes. And often people in tamas kind of cycle between these. I'm helpless because it's your fault. I'm helpless because it's my fault. All right, Rajas. Yes, it's all your fault, but I can do something about it. I can at least control my reactions. So yes, it's my parents' fault, my guru's fault, God's fault, the government's fault. All my problems are somebody else's fault. And they're all terrible. But I can control how I respond. I have some power. I can control how I deal with it. Higher rajas. I don't have to blame anybody. Whatever's happened has happened, and I have power to control how I respond. I don't have to criticize or blame. Now, sometimes people cycle between these two in tamas and this one in rajas. So you'll see that also. That people kind of pick their head up out of tamas for a few minutes and say, oh, I can control how I respond, and then they poof, back to the helpless. All right, in sattva, I'm ultimately responsible for everything that happens to me, by my karma, by my desires. Whatever is happening to me, ultimately, I have created this situation. And there's something that I can learn from it. I don't need to blame others. I don't need to blame myself. I'm looking for the lessons I can learn so that I can improve myself. Now, the reason this is a lower level of sattva is this idea is I'm going to improve myself so I can enjoy the world. This is like an aiming for the heavenly planets. You know, Everything that's happened to me is my responsibility. I'm going to work on improving myself so I can become a better person. Higher sattva. Everything that's happening to me is ultimately my responsibility. That's different from it's ultimately my fault. You hear? Do you hear the difference between it's ultimately my fault and it's ultimately my responsibility? These are all due to my choices, and how can I use this situation in order to get liberated? All right, follow? In bhakti, I'm ultimately responsible for everything that happens to me. It's not anyone's fault, and I don't even blame myself. I'm responsible means I can do something about it. So I focus on increasing my gratitude, love, and service to the Lord without guilt and without blame. Now, by the way, you can't necessarily just jump from here to here. You know, we do have to do some work sometimes in ourselves to deal with blame and guilt. All right, let's look at some Shastric statements that should help us with this. So this is Maharaj Parikit, where Dharma the bull was being beaten by Kali. And three of his legs were already broken. And Parikit says, "Who broke your legs?" And Dharma says, "I don't know, I can't say." There's seven different answers to this question. Now this always bewildered me because, first of all, why is Parikit even asking? Kali's right there with a stick. It's like kind of obvious. But still he's asking. And Dharma says, "I'm not going to blame anybody." And again, he lists seven possible causes. And Maharaj Parikit says, "Because you did not blame anyone, you are Dharma." At the same time, Parikit punishes Kali. Yeah, so what does this mean, name the perpetrator? Does this mean that if somebody kills my child, that I don't report it to the police? No, that's not what it means. But it means that I don't harbor anger and hatred towards that person. The murderer, the rapist, the thief, they're full of envy and hatred, yes? That's why they're doing what they're doing. They hate the fact that I have money that they think they should have. That's why they're stealing it from me. You understand? If I'm similarly hating them, then I'm as bad as they are. Then I have the same problem. So therefore, to be actually in Dharma, I may say, "Hey, this guy stole my money, my dear officer, please arrest them." But that's for the good of that person and for the good of society, not out of hatred. I really like this one. Prabhupada says, "You say they mistake. Who are they? You say you do mistake. Don't say they. This is bureaucracy, they. You are all they." So it always amuses me when people talk about ISKCON. I've never met Mr. ISKCON. Who is this Mr. ISKCON? We're all ISKCON. Yes? Yes. And then, of course, this very famous verse you all say here every day, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnuna, Amani na Manidena, Kirtaniya Sanatari. This is also about not blaming. Not blaming, not shaming. We go to the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna lists what qualities make us very dear to him. So this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. I think this is 13 and 14. He says, "Advaishya means a person does not have hatred even for those who hate oneself. Rather, one has friendliness toward them, maitra. One is merciful to them, thinking they should not end up in unfortunate circumstances." Can you think of someone in the Bhagavatam who absolutely exemplifies this statement of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur? Prahlad Maharaj. Now, he wasn't a fool. He said, "My father, my dear Lord, my father has committed so many offenses against you and against me. Please liberate him." Please help him. What's another example? Jesus is a fantastic example.
Ambarish Maharaj.
Ambarish Maharaj. Oh, I love teaching because I have something in my head, and you guys are thinking of so many other examples that I didn't think of. Ambarish Maharaj, yes. What a story. Durvasa Muni tries to kill him because he drank some water. Like, seriously? You're going to kill somebody because they drank a little water before you ate? That's kind of extreme, isn't it? Yes? And Durvasa is saying to Ambarish, you don't know the principles of religion, you don't know proper etiquette, you don't know proper behavior. It's like, you're the one who doesn't know proper behavior, Durvasa. You're the one with the problem. Tried to kill him. And so the Sudarshan Chakra is following Durvasa all over the universe. Durvasa goes to Lord Vishnu, who says, sorry, I can't help you. You know, you got to settle this with Ambarish. So finally he goes back to Ambarish, and does Ambarish say, oh good, there's the Sudarshan Chakra, I hope it cuts off your head. Does he say that? Would he be justified in saying that? Yes, he would be. Come on, somebody tries to kill you for drinking a little water? It would be completely reasonable to say, Jai Sudarshan, cut off his head, Haribo. That would be completely logical. Instead, he offers prayers to Sudarshan. Please don't hurt this Brahmana. It has a nice ending. They become good friends. After all that. Any other example?
Lord Nityananda.
Lord Nityananda, but I asked for the Bhagavatam, but Lord Nityananda, yes, who gave mercy to Jaghai and Madhai, even to Madhai.
Lord Shiva.
With Vrikasura?
Or with, when the sacrifice was going down.
Oh, with Daksha. Yeah. Oh, Lord Shiva with Daksha, yes. He's like, it's fine. Of course, by that time, Daksha had a goat's head. By the time he apologized to Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva was like, we know we're fine. Don't worry about it. So I'm thinking about Draupadi. So Aswatthama kills Draupadi's sons in their sleep after the war is over. He did it to please Duryodhan, but Duryodhan wasn't happy. Duryodhan was actually angry about it. And Arjuna says, I'm going to kill this Aswatthama. You can take your bath standing on his head. Right? And he brings him back. And then Draupadi immediately says, he's killed all my children and I'm now crying. If you kill him, his mother will cry. Yes, 13 to 14. Prabhupada's purport on 13 to 14, chapter 12, is this person is acting as my enemy due to my own past misdeeds, so it is better to suffer than to protest. This is the Mari Krishna Rake K, Rake Krishna Mari K principle. Perhaps in our life someone has tried to hurt us and they haven't been able to do anything. Have you had some experience like this? Somebody wished you ill, but it just there was no effect. Or maybe someone tried to do good for you, and there was no effect. It didn't work. Or perhaps you've tried to do good for someone, and it just didn't work. Or maybe you tried to do something bad to somebody, and it just had no effect. People cannot do good for us or bad for us without the permission of the Lord. It's impossible. Now, in general life, nobody can give us something that's not our karma. They just can't. If they could, it wouldn't be fair. Nobody can help us or hurt us in some way that we haven't already ordered through our karma. The exception to that is people can give us bhakti that's undeserved. we can get bhakti that we haven't done anything to deserve. But Krishna does not allow someone to get harmed in a way that they don't deserve. He just doesn't allow it. So if someone's acting as the agent of some suffering for me, there's something I have done to put that in motion. So Krishna says, one who's dear for him is he by whom no one is put into difficulty. Prabhupada, this is from text 15. Prabhupada says, no one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. Since a devotee is kind to everyone, he does not act in such a way as to put others into anxiety. Of course, we may put others into anxiety without meaning to. Yes, but we should do our best not to put others into anxiety. And if we notice we should put others into anxiety, we should try to apologize and rectify. Who is not disturbed by anyone. Prabhupada says in this purport that usually if we're expecting that some enemy is going to hurt us, we're fearful. What will happen? What will happen? What will happen? The devotee has faith that whatever happens is under the control of Krishna. And of course, this very famous verse, Tate Nukampam Sukshamikshamana, that whatever difficulty we go through, we don't blame ourselves, we don't blame others, we don't go through guilt and shame and blame. We just say, whatever is happening, this is the mercy of the Lord because of choices that I have made. And so I will simply offer more obeisances to him and await his mercy. So, again, in Tamas, I blame others and I can't do anything about it. Higher Tamas is I blame myself and I can't do anything about it. Lower Rajas is I blame others, but I can control my reactions. Higher Rajas is I can control my reactions without blame. Lower Sattva is I'm responsible and let me learn some lessons so I can be a better person. Higher Sattva is I'm ultimately responsible without blame and I focus on liberation. And Bhakti is I'm ultimately responsible and without blame or guilt or shame, I focus on increasing my gratitude, love, and service. By the way, if guilt and shame come to us, we shouldn't be repressing them, but simply let them flow through us. As Krishna says, one who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear, remaining always neutral, knowing that the modes alone are active. So when tamagun affects our body and mind, we just say, oh, there's Mr. Thomas, hello. Hang around as long as you like, but I'm really not going to talk to you. Okay, make sense? So when Mr. Thomas or Mr. Roger come, hi, I'm Roger, I'm Thomas, say, hi, you're Krishna's energy, fine, do whatever you like, and I'm going on with my own business. All right, the last thing we're going to look at, which is very important, is having boundaries, protecting ourselves. Because everything we've talked about so far can be interpreted, can be misinterpreted, as meaning that I allow myself to be harmed. That I either harm myself or allow myself to be harmed in the name of surrender and humility. So we're going to look also at it's very important, Jai Shishi Panchatattva, Jai Shishi Gornitai, to have boundaries. Prahlad Maharaj told his friends, just as you love and care for yourself, you should love and care for the Lord. Well, that means you love and care for yourself. And the great devotees are called Atmarama, Atmarati, Atmatushta, one who loves himself. Just like I'm part of parcel of Krishna, if I don't love myself, then I'm not loving a part of Krishna. Do you follow? It's like, Krishna, I love everything about you except your fingernail. I don't love your fingernail. We're part of him. Yes? Okay. First, accepting only what's necessary. This person did not follow this. Prabhupada says in Nectar Devotion, in the Naradiya Purana, it is directed one should not accept more than necessary. The purport is that one should not neglect following the principles of devotional service, nor should one accept the rulings of devotional service, which are more than what he can easily perform. So this is from a letter. I'm going to go through it piece by piece. Krishna consciousness means we should always be satisfied and happy. Not that we must work something impossible, becoming overburdened. And then because we are unhappy by so much trouble, we lose enthusiasm altogether and give up all hope. No, if too much endeavor is there, that is to be avoided. By all means, we must preserve our spiritual status. That is the point. Not that we are mad after big buildings, many devotees, life members, this, that. Now this one really, I'm like, wow. No. These are only ways to engage the devotees so that they may apply the principles of devotional living to some kind of work for practical realization of these principles. It is not the result of the work we want. If only one person daily, if we sincerely preach to such one person a day, that is sufficient, never mind big, big programs. Now, obviously, Prabhupada wanted big, big programs. But the point is, don't do big, big programs if they're killing you. Now, that's not the point. What does Krishna say to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita? 6:17. We have to be regulated in eating, sleeping, recreation, and work. And then this we've been talking about in career dharma. Don't do somebody else's work. That's also a boundary. Krishna says it twice. Look at this. Says the same thing. Shrayan swadharma viguna, same thing. Paradharma swanustitat, same thing. This is very similar. Swabhava swadharma. Yes? And here's this word, bhayavaha. Your work will become a vehicle of fear. Now, we can do someone else's work briefly for an emergency. Emergency should be rare and short. Someone told me yesterday he was doing someone else's work for 10 years as an emergency. My dear friends, that is not an emergency. What happens when we do someone else's work? We become exhausted because we are trying to adopt values and a dharma that is not ours. And it will be much more difficult to surrender to Krishna because we are much more likely to get attached to the externals of our work. We talked about this yesterday. And neutrality toward the modes. This is from 14:22. Do not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present or long for them when they disappear. I wish that when I first joined the Hare Krishna movement that this was really emphasized by the devotee preachers. This neutrality toward the modes. Many times I had the mistaken idea that I was supposed to repress or suppress the urges of the modes. But no, one should just be neutral. What does Krishna say? Be unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions, remaining neutral, knowing that the modes alone are active. Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport that as long as we have a material body, our body and mind are going to be affected by the modes of nature. He says, when a living entity stays in this material world, embodied by the material body, it is to be understood that he is under the control of one of the three modes of material nature. When he is actually out of the body, then he is out of the clutches of the material modes of nature. But as long as he is not out of the material body, he should be neutral. Sometimes we think that, well, oh, when I become a pure devotee, there'll never be any rajas, tamas, or sattva going through my body and mind. That is not the fact. There will be. But you will not pay any attention to it. It won't be important. Whether you are materialist or whether you're a pure devotee, when you walk down the street, there will be so many cars and motorcycles and bicycles and people and dogs. But if you have your business, then you're not particularly bothered. That's a beautiful person. That's an ugly person. That's a friendly dog. That's not a friendly dog. That's an expensive car. That's not an... Who cares? They are just going past you. Does that make sense? Or you go in a shop where they're selling televisions and they're showing some movie on the television so you can see how well it works. But you're not watching the movie. You follow? You don't even know what the movie's about. You're just walking past and something's there. It doesn't matter. So one should be neutral. Not trying to kill the modes and not trying to enjoy them. Yeah? This is very important for keeping our boundaries. Okay, summarizing again, we looked at determination in Tamas, Rajas, Sattva, and Bhakti. We looked at Prabhupada's letter to Jayapataka Maharaj with the 4 points of the secret of surrender. We looked at the importance of always having fresh challenges. We looked at taking responsibility without blame or shame, and also protecting ourselves with good boundaries. So, are there questions or comments or additions, subtractions?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I have a question I should have 2 questions, but I'll ask this first one. Should we do the services according to our nature? And
yes.
So, and the second one is that sometimes, you know, there are services that are just needed, so which is like emergency, so then we do. But does this verse where it says that you should perform according to your just the verse we saw? Does this correspond to this question that we should work according to our nature?
Yes.
The services.
Yes.
Shouldn't do others' occupation, but should do work according to our nature.
Correct. If there are services that need to be done and there's nobody at all who has a nature that matches them, then we need to find somebody who has a nature that matches that service. Now we can say, well, we don't have enough people. So suppose everybody's engaged according to their nature. Would more people come? What do you think?
Yes.
Of course. If you think, well, if I come, I have to do something that I don't like and I'm not good at. Yes?
In that verse, Srila Prabhupada said, do your service only for Krishna, never mind what it is.
Right.
Never mind what it is, that means that it could be work that's not according to your nature.
Oh, could it mean that? That's not the way I understand it, because that would be, and that's, I'm very glad you asked that. If we interpret it that way, we'd have to be saying that Prabhupada was contradicting the scripture and contradicting himself. So that particular way of explaining it, therefore, is very unlikely to be the way Prabhupada intended it. What I understand it to mean is it doesn't matter whether it's a so-called big and important thing or it's a small and unimportant thing. That's not the issue. That the issue is not like, well, you know, if I'm dressing the deities, I'm going to pay attention to every detail and I'm really going to do it nice for Krishna's pleasure. But if I'm just, you know, cleaning up after the feast, then that's not so important. I understand it more like that. You know, we have a tendency to kind of rank what we're doing. Like that, you know, well, this is something that doesn't matter how it's done, and this is something that's important. I mean, it is true that sometimes we have to do things that are not according to our nature in brief, short emergencies. But they should be brief, short emergencies. If we're constantly in emergency mode, there's something radically, radically wrong with our life. There's something really, really wrong.
Okay.
that needs to be fixed. I should also say that even when we're working according to our nature, that doesn't mean that we're going to like every single part of it. I don't think that's ever possible. Does that make also sense to everybody? I mean, I really liked having children and being a mother, but I never liked cleaning up vomit in my bed at 2 in the morning. I didn't enjoy that. I would have much rather if I could have, you know, called some servant and had them do that. It's really funny. I use that as an example, and then that day I saw my granddaughter, whose 2-year-old child had vomited in her bed at 2 in the morning. Obviously, that doesn't happen every day. But I really didn't like that part of motherhood. I could have skipped that part. So there's always something we don't like, even about things that we enjoy, that are our nature. Yeah? I mean, I like traveling and visiting different temples. I don't like buying airline tickets. Now, I've gotten very, 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 very good at buying airline tickets. But I don't enjoy it. And the problem is, if I ask other people to buy the tickets, they end up getting me some, you know, 40-hour route that could have been 5 hours just because it was cheaper, and then I'm traveling all night, and I have to go to Bangkok to get to, you know, Frankfurt. So sometimes I prefer to do it myself. But I don't enjoy that part of it. So when we say work according to your nature, or like I don't enjoy going through airport security, I always worry they're going to take out my shoes. What are these? You know, so I'm not saying that that everything that's according to our nature is going to be something that we enjoy. That's not just the definition of it. But yeah, thank you. Thank you. So many people misuse these instructions to say that. Well, you should just be totally, whatever service is needed, you should just be totally into that to please Krishna. And that's, yeah. Yes?
Hi, Krishna. For this lecture, only practical answer, practical questions. We live in ashram, and we have different nature. Someone has nature, brahminika to altar service, some serve guru, some like cooking nature, some with flowers, and maybe no one is nature for cleaning toilet, for cleaning bathroom. We live in ashram, and it's your turn. No, it is not my nature.
Ah, oh, very nice. Okay, well, first thing is, all of us have to do things to live, some of which are unpleasant. That's just life, unless you can hire servants to do them. If you use toilets, you should clean toilets. I mean, some places they hire cleaners and they come in and clean everything. That's also acceptable. But if the temple doesn't hire cleaners, then if you're using the toilet, you clean the toilet. That's just life. Everybody has to do some of just life things. You know, the demigods never have to do laundry. Their clothes never get dirty. They don't sweat. I don't like doing laundry, but I wear clothes. I have to do laundry. That's just, everybody has to do that. That's not a nature thing. If you eat, you wash your plate. You pass stool, you clean the toilet. You wear clothes, you wash your clothes. Now, if someone's duty all day long is cleaning, then it should be something that they really enjoy. And if there's no one in the temple who really enjoys cleaning, and you need somebody to clean for 10 hours a day, then you need to either hire people or you need to try to bring someone in who really enjoys cleaning, rather than forcing people to be cleaning for 8 or 10 hours a day. Does that make some sense?
The same, you can share, man. During the weekend, share someone today and another day.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But if you're going to say you should be cleaning 8 hours a day every day,
no,
then that should be someone who really enjoys cleaning. Yeah, but that's just life. Everybody has to do that. Unless you can hire servants. Everybody has to do that. That's just what you have to do because you have a material body. I mean, that's just join the club of humanity. Is that all right? But I'm glad you asked that because I remember once sitting in Bhagavatam class and the speaker said, I know I'm a Brahmin because I've never done any menial work in my life. And I'm thinking, oh my God, are you off there, buddy? I mean, Prabhupada says a brahmana leaves a place cleaner than they found it. That to me means every place. That to me means a bathroom in an airplane. Srila Prabhupada gave me second initiation. I better make sure that if I use the toilet in an airplane, that that room is cleaner when I leave than before I came. If there's paper towels on the floor, I pick them up. If there's things stuffed in the trash coming out of it, I push it down. I wash my hands. Prabhupada would get very upset if there was some dirty, disgusting thing and the devotees were just walking by and doing nothing. He says, this is tamagun. I don't know if I should say this or not. So where I'm staying, there was a pile of something, I think date pits, in a corner of one of the steps going up. And you didn't know what it was. Like, was it dead bugs? Was it animal poop? Or was it date pits? I don't know. But there were probably about 40 or 50 of them in a corner of the step. And so every time I would go by, I think, how can I clean this up? What? And finally I found there was a little broom and dustpan in the apartment where I was staying. So I cleaned it up. We're all supposed to do that. Prabhupada said we should be revolutionary clean. So we should all be, if there's something that needs to be done and we can do it, and if it's a small thing, then do it. This is for Krishna. That is a good example of, this is where I am. Krishna's put me in this place. And I'm seeing this trash on the ground here at Krishna's temple. Prabhupada would do that even anywhere. If Prabhupada saw like somebody's water was dripping in their yard, he would turn it off. He'd say, don't waste Krishna's energy. But that doesn't mean that all of us should be cleaning 8 hours a day. You follow? There are people who love to do that. And that they love to do that all day. Is that okay? And thank you so much. This was such a... was this helpful? Yeah? Now the temple president is going to... Yes, Ananta Prabhu. He's going to say, Urmila, never come back here again. Yes.
How this concept corresponds to the Sakama and Nishkama principles? Nishkama, Kama, Sakama, Nishkama.
Can you explain more what your question is?
So this working according to the nature, we have some attachments in that. How this, this progression, Sakama, Kama Yoga, Nishkama, Kama Yoga, so when one person is very attached to the results and to activity, right? But with the rise in the consciousness, then this comes the Nishkama, which the devotee person, yogi, whatever, is not attached neither to the result, neither to the activity.
So I mentioned this yesterday, that if you look at the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, but let's look particularly at the Bhagavad Gita, you see that Krishna emphasizes working in detachment, right? Very much so. I didn't count how many verses, but a lot. He's emphasized working with detachment. And he's also emphasizing working according to your nature. Both.
This depends probably on the consciousness of the...
I don't think so. I mean, Prabhupada does have one purport where he says that someone who's completely liberated can do anything. But what we see in the Shastra is that even the liberated devotees don't generally do anything. That even the great pure devotees generally act according to that nature of the body and the mind they have. There may be some exceptions, but very unusual. The way I think of it, you know, Prabhupada says in one place at least that we're all cells in the universal body. So I want my brain cells to be in my brain. I don't want my brain cells to be in my stomach. I don't care how attached or detached the brain cell is. It belongs in my brain. The lung cells belong in my lung. Now, probably my lung cells are selfish. Probably all the little cells in my lung don't even know that I exist. And they're just thinking about their own eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Does that make sense? They probably don't even know that there's some soul that's kind of, you know, managing the body. They're probably not really consciously working for my benefit. I doubt if the cells in my stomach are thinking, I'm digesting this food so Urmila can be happy. They're thinking, you know, I'm just getting my own food and my own oxygen for myself. But if, let's say they could, let's say they could become aware of my existence and say, I'm going to be a stomach cell, not only for my benefit, but for Urmila's benefit. So that's how I see that we're supposed to be working. I have a particular nature. I just do. I have a particular way that I'm wired in this life and in this body. I can do that for my own happiness, or I can do it for Krishna's happiness. And that's what I see Krishna's choices that he's giving to Arjuna. He says, you are a statesman. You're a warrior. You're a statesman. You're a prince. That's what you are. That's your nature. You're not going to be able to repress it. And you shouldn't do anyone else's work. Your real choice is do it for yourself or do it for me. So I see Sakarma Karma Yoga is, I'm offering it to Krishna, but I'm hoping I'm going to get something. I'm hoping I'm going to go to heaven, or I'm hoping I'm going to get salvation. And then Nishkama is, I'm offering it to Krishna just to make Krishna smile. Now, what's going to make Krishna happy? Krishna is going to be happy if I'm the best expression of myself. Krishna's not going to be happy if I'm pretending to be somebody else in the name of detachment. I just don't see how it works. Like, I can donate my car to the temple, but I can't donate your car. I don't own it. I don't see how I can give Krishna something that's not me. I don't have it. I just don't see how it's possible. And there's so many strong prohibitions against trying to pretend to be something that you're not. I mean, ultimately, none of us are this nature and this body and this mind, but this is what I have. It's like, again, what car I have. You know, if I'm driving a Tesla, it drives differently than if I'm driving a Volkswagen. And if I'm driving a Tesla, I have to drive the Tesla for Krishna. I mean, I could drive it and say, whoa, I'm driving a Tesla, while I'm doing Krishna's service. Or I could go, I don't really care, but this is the car I have and I'm driving it the way that it works. It works differently. And if I'm driving a Volkswagen, I have to drive that the way that works. If I pretend my Volkswagen is a Tesla, or I pretend my Tesla is a Volkswagen, I don't see how I can do that. It doesn't work. I end up in an artificial situation, and then I end up creating chaos in the social order, as we talked about yesterday briefly. I don't see how that's service. I'm just going to mess everything up. You know, I can't do it right. theoretically, you could say, well, Krishna can empower anybody to do anything. Yeah, but he doesn't usually. It's just not usually what he does. I mean, a really simple example, if we look at personality types, is some people are very cautious by nature, and some people are more risk-taking by nature, right? Who do you want managing the temple treasury? Your cautious people or your risk-taking people? Who do you want preaching in China? Your cautious people or your risk-taking people? You can't exchange them. If you send your super cautious person to preach in Saudi Arabia, they won't be able to function. If you send your hyper risk-taking people to run the treasury, you'll be very sorry. I've seen it done. You know, so that the one is no longer identifying with it. One's not thinking, this is me. As one progresses in yoga, one identifies more and more with the real self. But it's still the car I have. You know, somebody's got a bicycle, somebody's got a car, somebody's got a boat, somebody's got a skateboard, and that's what it is. If I've got a boat, I've got a boat. But eventually you come like, I'm not the boat. In the beginning you're like, yeah, I got a boat. I'm going to use it for Krishna. You know, and after a while it's like, yeah, I got a boat. Using it for Krishna. Does that make some sense? And at the higher stages of bhakti, especially, this is true at all stages, but especially the higher stages, it's a nectar devotion, bhakti rasamrita sindhu. But Prabhupada says one should serve the Lord according to one's personal taste. Said some people are more interested in serving the deity, some people are interested in chanting, some people are interested in doing service in the temple, and one should serve according to one's personal taste. And this is talking about people at, you know, Ruchi and Ashakti and Bhava. Not just, you know, some neophyte who's attached to something. I have confidence that if we do this, that a lot more people will be attracted, that they'll think, wow, I can give myself to God. It's what we want to do. If we were to define what is perfection, I think we can define perfection as I am being the best version of myself in the service of the Lord. And that's true in this body with whatever wiring I have in this body due to my karma, due to Krishna, who knows, doesn't matter. It's what I got. And it's true ultimately in the spiritual world in my eternal position. The same principle is basically true. That perfection is being the best version of myself for the pleasure of Krishna. Giving Krishna the best version of myself. I can't give him anything else. I just can't. I don't have it to give him. I might want to, but I just don't. I can't give him the best version of you. Do you still have some doubt, or is that all right?
No, there are different perspectives. I heard also other explanations, but this is another...
Give me another explanation.
No, in the classes and the Purnachandra Goswami, when he's explaining the Bhagavad Gita, that section... He explains that in the higher levels that I also mentioned, it's not exclusive. I mean, it's also, it's another perspective, the same thing. Of course, it's not right or wrong, right? So there is that when God progresses in consciousness, that nature's dharma is not so much, I would say, it's not so much attached to that. It's for the pleasure of the Lord. He also does other things, and does in his nature obstructs him in that sense.
I'd like to see an example. I mean, you know, with all respect to Purnachandra Maharaj, I'd like to see an example. My concern is that, and this is a major concern for me, having been in the Hare Krishna movement now 50 years, is that if we think like that, there's a great possibility for exploitation, is what I see. is that this needs to be done, and therefore you should be an advanced devotee, and you should do this for Krishna without attachment, never mind if it's suitable for you or not. And that we put people in emergency situations for decades and damage them in the name of advancement. That's what I've practically seen it, and I see it all the time, everywhere. And I see people doing it to themselves. Not just that some authority is doing it to them. I mean, I see that too. But I also see that people do it to themselves, that they try to force themselves to do something that's against their nature in the name of being advanced and the name of being surrendered. But I just don't see. I mean, Prabhupada, the example that Prabhupada gives of devotees who can do anything is like Parasaram, who's born in a Brahmana family but acts like a Kshatriya. But that's according to birth. Also, he's an incarnation of the Lord, I mean. Or Vishramrita, but Vishramrita took 60,000 years to change from a Kshatriya to a Brahmana. And it wasn't easy. You know, I mean, I do see that in principle, if we're completely liberated from the body, that we could theoretically do anything and everything for the service of the Lord. But because Prabhupada says that in a purport. But again, I don't see that practically happening in the lives of devotees in the Shastra. I just don't see it as the example at all. I mean, we have some examples of avadutas who don't do anything in the world. They're completely out of all societal or cultural norms. And they're not really acting according to anything. I mean, another consideration is that in the Vanaprastha order, one gives up one's varna. I mean, even in ordinary life, retirement means you give up your career, yes? So at the Vanaprastha stage, which you can go to directly from the Brahmacharya ashram, you don't have to go through the Grihastha ashram, then one is engaging, theoretically at least, that the idea is that one is engaging only in bhakti, that one is not doing any dharma in the world, not their own or anyone else's. And one is just doing the 64 angas of bhakti. But then you're going to the principle given by Rupa Goswami and repeated by Srila Prabhupada that one should do the angas of bhakti according to one's taste. So there's a transcendent-like version of Swadharma that's not according to, that your varna isn't operable anymore. If you've retired from your varna. And certainly in sannyas life, there's no consideration of varna at all. So that's also there. But we've also seen people, you know, in their 20s think, well, I'm just going to do bhakti and I'm not going to do anything by varna. And they can't maintain it. Their urge to do something according to varna then manifests at some time. We've seen that over and over again. But if a person can go directly from youth to vanaprastha and skip working in the world, then yeah, go for it. But that's just the angas of bhakti. But again, that's still done according to one's taste. Now, as a neophyte, according to one's taste may be what I like to enjoy in the world. And as an advanced devotee, according to one's taste, Rupa Goswami explains, it's, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in Rag Bhartchandrika really expands on this, is what nourishes one's inner rasa with Krishna. And that's even advanced sadhakas, that's not just siddhas. So even advanced sadhakas, their taste is what nourishes my real self. But there's still a distinction. So some advanced devotees are going to find going on parikrama to holy places really nourishes their inner mood, and for other devotees it doesn't. So that's still operable. But then you're kind of looking at a different system. It doesn't mean that because someone who's given up varna and they're just doing bhakti, that applies to somebody who's still doing varna in the world. That's dangerous. Nor does it mean that someone who's just doing bhakti has no personal taste. I mean, like we see devotees on that level of vanaprastha and sannyas who study shastra 8 hours a day and others who chant japa 8 hours a day, or do kirtan 8 hours a day, or who are just on the altar all day, because that's according to their personal taste. Does that make sense? But that's in a different, that's a different category. And such people are no longer concerned with being active in the world and making a change in the world and influencing the world, even for Krishna. So it could be that Maharaj Vipranachandra Maharaj was speaking like that, that one just loses one's interest in having. And I mean, I've noticed this in myself as I've gotten older, that I, this concept that I'm going to change the world and fix the world, and it's just like, it's, there's no attraction in that anymore. It's like, yeah, whatever. But, you know, when I was young, that was very dominant. I want to do this thing in the world, and I want to get this thing. I think it's natural. There's a natural progression in the ashrams. So that detachment comes as one progresses through the ashrams. Do you think this sort of deals with it better? You happier? You're always happy. It's these discussions, which is one of the many reasons I love coming to Ljubljana, except now it's late and we need to eat. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.